Man, Job for a Cowboy is probably never going to release another album. Who knows if it's ever going to be as good as Sun Eater was. Wait a minute. What? Just checking my phone. Holy shit, Job for a Cowboy just announced a new album? And it's coming out next year? Man, me and Mike gotta get on this shit right now.
People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Renegade Jukebox on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host this evening. Joining me, as always, is the Super Saiyan Death Metal God himself, Nick.
Actually getting to talk about a death metal album for a change.
Not just any death metal album. This is the first album from Job for a Cowboy in 9 years.
10 years, technically, but semantics. But care if I hold up the album, even though everybody listening is not going to see it?
Please.
In all its beautiful glory from Metal Blade Records, this is Moon Healer, guys.
Now, before we get into the album itself, I have to praise whoever came up with the album art, because that thing is just that, a work of art.
I was actually just going to bring this up even probably when we were like knee deep into the album, excuse the pun, but I was actually just going to bring this up. Apparently, the guy who did the album art, he's having issues with the band, claiming that they never announced who the artist behind it was. But then I go and look in the fucking liner notes the very next day. Like, this all happened the day the album came out. We wanted to give a bit of a week in between us just processing it and not just wanting to fanboy over it. We wanted to actually formulate our own thoughts on the album. But for some reason, the guy who did the album art claimed that Job for a Cowboy never gave him enough credit. But it's like, he's in the fucking liner notes. They praised his album art on Instagram the day the album dropped. So I don't know what this dude's fucking issue is. Like, especially given how prominent nowadays with dumbasses like Pestilence using AI to make album art. Yeah. My thoughts exactly, Mike, and it looks fucking terrible. It's a work of art. Like, this literally reminds me of just, I can't think of just off the top of my head, but like just countless of the best technical death metal albums.
Yeah, some just examples that I've seen, even like deathcore bands like the Red Cord or Through the Eyes of the Dead, they all have those like really striking covers that you just want to pick up.
For me, you know, staying in the technical death metal territory is Decapitated's album The Nihility. Like, that album still looks awesome from the cover alone and makes you want to listen to the album, and the album is just as good as the cover. So it's like, why would you just waste good album art by just using whatever's just in the public domain to be used? Like, why the fuck would you do that? But let's kind of get away from that. Mind if I fill in a little bit of the gaps for our listeners since we last talked about this band on Why We Love This Band?
Great idea, because it has been a minute since we recorded that episode.
So to kind of fill in the gaps, after Sun Eater comes out, nothing. Like, I really hate to be that anticlimactic, but no tours, no promo, played one show in Vancouver in 2016 that I unfortunately missed and would have loved to have seen, because Dillinger Escape Plan was playing that show, Revocation. Like, it was an unreal gig that I feel like crap that I missed. But no, that's all Job for a Cowboy did. They literally posted a photo of their tour van on fire, and that seemed to be it. But it turned out it was actually because Johnny Davey, he became a dad, and he actually went back to school.
Yeah, that would do it. That would eat up a lot of your time.
And I'm probably going to be way off with this because Tony and Al don't have a Wikipedia page, but it's in typical Job for a Cowboy fashion. A member goes back to school for something really high demand. Like, I really, it's eating me alive right now, whether it's Tony or Al, who lives in Ireland right now, is getting their doctorate right now. So it's like, these are very clearly smart dudes who know a lot about fucking science and stuff. Like, it's kind of unreal and kind of fits well with the theme of the album, I guess. But in this case, yeah, they literally became adults and got lives outside of music. And Nick Shins, really, he played bass for Havoc, and just really, that's about it. John the Charm Rice still obviously hasn't come back. Our drummer on this album is Naveen Copperweiss, who we've talked about before on this show, even on the last Machine Head album from 2 years ago. So clearly we've still got some of the best musicians working on this record. And trust me, guys, this thing was talked about, but borderline in development hell since, I want to say, at least 2017.
That is a very long time, but honestly, I have to say, the wait was worth it.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely. This thing, I really don't want to just be fanboying over this and kind of approach it objectively, but I think pretty much everybody who's listened to this thing agrees that this is a masterpiece. I think this is probably going to be my album of the year, or at least in my top three. Like, I would be surprised if anything booted it out of the top three. Even
I'm gonna paraphrase how I described Dune Part Two, which right now is my number one movie of the year. I'm not saying that no other album has a chance of topping Moonhealer. I'm just saying this album took the bar and threw it into the sky.
Oh, yeah, I guess in this case, I'm going to make a really bad pun here. The bar didn't go towards the sun. It sought out the moon.
Perfect.
Yeah. We'll get into that song in a minute. But in this case, just one more thing to fill in the gaps. I still don't know if you ended up checking out Serpent of Gnosis yet, but that was a project that Johnny, Al, and Tony did kind of in between Sun Eater and Moon Healer. So at least we got an inkling in between the gaps between albums. But just this time, we're kind of gonna take the same approach we did when we were talking about Pain Remains by Lorna Shore, in that I don't really feel comfortable going track by track because it's gonna get super redundant fast, guys. It's literally just gonna be us going, this song's really good. This song's also really good. This song is phenomenal. I mean, we will make one obvious highlight when we get to it, but just with that in mind, I just kind of feel more comfortable talking about each band member and what they're bringing to the table.
That's exactly what I had in mind, because everyone on this record brings something to the table. So...
Honestly, Johnny does not sound like his voice has aged or like just decayed over time. He sounds basically about as good as he did on Genesis, even.
I would have to agree with that.
Like, his vocals on this thing are phenomenal. It doesn't sound like, I'm just going to say this about the entire album as a whole, because I know there are a lot of people who still want them to go back to the Doom EP style. Really, how insulting does that have to be for a guy either pushing 40 or already in his 40s being told to go back and make something that sounds like something he made when he was 17? Like, how insulting does that have to be?
Pretty insulting, considering
considering all the other albums after Doom are way better.
Exactly. Like, In preparation for this podcast, I went back and just listened to a bunch of their previous records just on shuffle. And the difference between the Doom EP and even Genesis is like night and day.
Oh, even talking to friends of mine on Instagram after, you know, posting my copy of the vinyl the day I got it. Thankfully, Amazon sent it the day the album came out for a change. But one friend of mine messaged me and he was like, "Hey, dude, I didn't think Job for a Cowboy sounded like this." So I kind of explained their evolution in their sound. I was like, "Yeah, the Doom EP is just bland, generic deathcore, but somehow it inspired a lot of bands. I don't know how or why, but Genesis and Ruination are way more interesting, where it's more technical death metal. Then Demonocracy is way more pushing it towards borderline progressive death metal. And then Sun Eater is just flat out progressive death metal, along with Moon Healer for that matter. And, you know, we go on this diatribe because it's like, the band has kind of made it clear in interviews promoting this that they just wanted to make this album for them. And I kind of consider it a big middle finger to all the people who just want Entombment of the Machine Part 2.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because on the Wikipedia page, they under genre, they put progressive death metal and deathcore. And I guess you can kind of hear a little bit of deathcore influence in there, but it's like a very small part of just their giant, like, leaning into the more progressive style.
I forget which band you and me were talking about, but we had some kind of similar-ish conversation about, actually, now that I think about it, it was probably Shadow of Intent, how kind of like Black Dahlia Murder, they get tagged with deathcore, but really all they do is just kind of pal around with bands in that genre and are friends with them. That's kind of how I'm feeling about still people who still think Job for a Cowboy is a deathcore band, because like even one of the reactions to the Agony Seeping Storm that I watched was like, "Oh, this doesn't sound like typical deathcore." And it was during like that funk bassline part in the last order of the song. Yeah, this is why I don't really rely on reaction videos to just be like, "Whoa, oh my God," to a song. I just kind of prefer to just sit back and like, if I naturally go like that, it's because the band did something to impress me. And that did happen a lot on this record. And I want to bring up the opening track, Beyond the Chemical Doorway, because Mike, that opening riff right there just put a gigantic smile on my face. Did it do the same thing for you?
It's the sonic equivalent of Keanu Reeves saying, "Yeah, I'm thinking I'm back."
Kind of. We're gonna actually have a sample drop in so that way you guys can understand what we're even talking about. So here it is, listen for yourselves.
Hours of the will, dusting rounds. All this work to do, I thought never to be a sound.
We are going to let go of the thing. Let go of the thing or everything else.
But my home goes in time. Forever to be.
For me, I just couldn't help but go, yeah, this band is back and didn't sound like they lost anything in the last decade. And that's the other thing I'm going to say, too, is that a lot of technical death metal nowadays, like with some exceptions, I honestly find a lot of it just kind of boring, where it just sounds like John Petrucci instructional demos rather than actual songs. One of the things I got to give praise to Tony, Al, Nick, and Johnny is just that these songs have hooks to them, but it's not just verse, chorus, verse. It all makes it feel like it has an organic flow throughout the entirety of the record.
Yeah, I could definitely feel it's so much less structured, and it almost feels more like classical music in the way these songs are arranged.
Oh, exactly. And I don't feel like any note is completely wasted on this thing. Everything feels like it serves a purpose and driving the music home in terms of, like, because this is basically a concept record and loosely tied into Sun Eater on some level. It feels like it's driving the concept. It's another one of those Job for a Cowboy concept albums that I'm not going to act like I 100% understand what's going on, but it's like, this actually sounds really cool.
I was about to say the same thing. Unlike other bands that maybe lean a little bit too heavily into the concept of their concept records. You don't really have to understand this one to enjoy it. You can just kind of vibe with the music.
Well, to kind of at least explain it so that way we're not just sounding super vague. So I'm going purely based off of the interview the Metal Meltdown did with Johnny, and he said Sun Eater was kind of them processing a friend losing themselves in an addiction to LSD. Like, he was just losing his mind on all of these drugs. So Sun Eater is their perception of what's going on. Moon Healer is from the kind of perception of what's going on from their friend and processing what they're seeing, which kind of explains why the music videos behind this album and just the album art alone just looks trippy as all bloody hell.
Yeah, that does explain things a lot.
Oh, and also big shout out to Nick Shins, because I believe this would have been, I don't know if it was the first music video he's ever directed, but definitely the first one I know of that he's been involved with behind the director's seat. Because seriously, guys, this almost gives Tool music videos a run for their money.
Man, it's not fair. He's great on the bass and behind the camera.
We can't all be multi-talented, unfortunately, Mike. I guess with just that in mind, another thing I got to bring up too is that, because I know Jason Sukoff is a talented ass guitarist, and you know, even with his disability, it's like he's still just that multi-talented and everything. The fact that he's made this album sound as good as it does, but still feels like it's a live band playing it, that unfortunately probably won't play a lot of these songs live, he managed to make this still sound like it has some dirt under its nails, but still everything comes through clear and crisp.
Oh yeah, pretty much every album that Sukoff has produced has that sort of energy to it.
Well, that's just kind of my thing that I feel about a lot of modern bands, is that yes, your production should be good, but at the same time it should still have dirt under its nails. Like, you don't need to Pro Tools everything to death. None of this really feels like it's just processed and pre-packaged. Every band member is bringing their A game. I mean, even Naveen Copperwhite literally does not need to be putting in this good of a drum performance, given that he's just a session guy. But look at the work he did on the last Machine Head album. The guy's clearly good at his job.
Yeah. No, he really put in the work in this. Every track that he's on is, he's just giving it his all.
Oh, and just as a big recommendation for everybody, go check out his band Entheos. They're awesome. They just put out an album last year that was phenomenal. That's obviously a technical death metal album, so you should be checking that out if you haven't. The album is called, I'm just pulling the Wikipedia up right now, Time Will Take Us All. Go jam that shit right away after you've jammed Moon Healer by Job for a Cowboy some more.
Hell yeah.
With that all in mind, what are some songs that are big highlights for you? Because again, guys, like, this is one of those front to back experiences that I feel like I borderline can only listen to this as a 39 minute song.
That's kind of where I'm at. But if I had to sing a few favorites, I would say Etch in Oblivion and Grinding Wheels of Ophanim, especially that bass riff in the beginning.
Just Nick Shins really has outdone himself on this album.
He's like almost the star of the album. Everyone puts in their work, but for this album, even more so than their previous ones, Nick Shins puts, he just like really goes the distance.
Oh, he gives these songs so much character. Again, I brought up that funk bassline part in The Agony Seeping Storm. You know, I do like to joke on Instagram a lot about my, I'm going to be very polite here, my unenthusiasm about Sleep Token. Here's my comparison that I'm really going to go with. I know some people will be like, it's unfair to compare an alt metal prog song like the summoning to the agony seeping storm, which is progressive death metal, but just kind of hear me out. I think the way the agony seeping storm has its kind of funky bassline section in that song flows organically with what came before it. It feels like it served a purpose in moving the song forward and organically tied everything together in that 4 minutes. Like even before we knew this was associated with a concept album, it felt like it was a necessary piece of the puzzle, right?
Uh-huh.
Whereas the summoning for me kind of just feels like the modern listener doesn't have that much variation. They probably top 40 pop listeners aren't gonna particularly care that goes from kind of a Diamond Eyes era Deftonesy kind of riff and then just suddenly change to a funk section.
As much as I enjoy Sleep Token, I will agree that they, how should I put this? Yeah, like what you said, this is Sleep Token is kind of like Baby's first prog band, where this album is for, I guess, more seasoned listeners. And I don't mean that in a gatekeepy way either. Just,
oh, we're going to get called. I've already been called apparently a gatekeeper for my, again, I'm going to be particularly polite because one person I did, we were kind of having a back and forth, but I did kind of de-escalate things and be like, hey, like, it's cool that you dig this. Not trying to hate on something that got you through like a dark time or anything, but yeah, I get where you're coming from, man. The Baby's first prog band analogy, I'm like, that is perfect.
Well, you know, we all got to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, that's just kind of how I feel about just the song construction, the musicianship, the production itself, the just kind of everything about this record. I can't really think of any flaws other than I'm gonna use one of my famous food analogies, is that I really feel like this album is like a really good steak, but could benefit from maybe a hair bit of fat to go along with it to make it that much more juicy. At the same time, though, this is still a really juicy, delicious steak, and I can't stop listening to it.
That steak analogy is pretty perfect, because this thing clocks in at, what, 39 minutes?
Oh, it's a breeze. I want to say, just given that this album, I don't want to say leaked, but a lot of people got their vinyl copies early from indie merch and just other sources, I guess, but we managed to hear it like a day or so early, and I was like, as soon as I heard it that first time, I was like, a couple hours later, I gotta hear this thing again. Then the next day I heard it while I was driving to work, I blared it, this thing obviously passes my gym test. And then obviously I just gave it a little bit of some breathing room afterwards, just so that way I'm not just listening to an album making it feel like I'm working to do something for the podcast. But I just gave it some space, listened to it on my drive to work again, loved it just as much, and loved it just as much before we started recording.
I'll admit that I didn't listen to it that much, but it is one of those records where like you catch yourself listening to just one track and then you're like, nope, I gotta keep going. I got to keep listening to the whole thing.
And that's a sign of a potential classic, is just the replayability of an album, how many times that you can keep listening to it and still keep getting something out of it after repeat listens. Because like sometimes there are odd exceptions, but sometimes I'm like, man, am I really up for a full album of this? In the case of Moon Healer, no, I'm up for multiple listens. But back up, like, is there any other songs that you're kind of just going like, man, this is a standout track for me?
That's the problem. They're all standout tracks. I guess another one that I could point to is The Sun Gave Me Ashes, So I Sought Out the Moon.
I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, I kind of can't help but feel like this song borderline is antagonizing all the people who just want Job for a Cowboy to be a deathcore band again.
Pretty much. Like
there's no breakdown in it, but it's like it's very groove heavy.
Yeah, we've spent an entire other podcast chronicling the evolution of their style. So to want them to go back to something very basic, it just doesn't feel like they're interested in going in that direction at all.
And that's why I use the analogy of it feels like one gigantic middle finger to the people who just want to hear that again. And I think that's actually kind of awesome. That was a huge highlight of the album for me, too. I mean, just how it ties into the entire concept of the record, just the playing, how heavy it is. It's a jam of a tune. And I'm almost kind of going, do I want to listen to it outside the context of the album just because it is that good of a song? Or do I want to hear the entire 39 minutes again? And one part of me wants to say both.
That's a fair answer.
I guess with that in mind, I feel like we fanboyed about a solid majority of this album and the band members. There's one song, though, I really want to highlight, and I feel like this could also be considered a flaw in the record. I really wish we did not hear this months before the album came out.
I know where you're going with this, and I absolutely agree.
So the last song on the album is called The Forever Rot, and it kind of perfectly encapsulates and feels like the end of, I'm going to go for another analogy, it kind of feels like if this album was an essay, this song would be the last paragraph to drive your entire point of the essay home. And everything that we just said and fanboyed about throughout this podcast can easily apply here. But this is also a case where I think this might be the longest song the band has ever recorded. Like, even considering how long the songs on Sun Eater were, which were almost pushing the 6:30 mark, this almost is 7 whole minutes, but it keeps your attention.
I'm just going through their Wikipedia page to confirm this, but yeah, no, The Forever Rot is their longest track at 6:40. And much like, though to a lesser extent, how the three-part suite of Lorna Shorn's Pain Remains is a great closing, like a great way to close out that record, The Forever Rot kind of does the same thing here.
Oh, absolutely. Like, even the slowdown part towards the end of the song, it just kind of feels like it doesn't feel like it stops being heavy. Like, the way I can describe the song is that it just starts on the gas pedal perfectly. It's not mid-tempo at all, but it still has that groove that drives the song home. Plenty of blast beats. Johnny's vocals sound amazing. Then it goes into a really massive, chunky chorus section. Then at about the 4-minute mark, it starts slowing down after one of the guitar solos that are just, again, I can't give enough praise to Tony and Al on this album. Immediately after that part, it slows down. And this is where we're going to have another sample be dropped in.
No, you're pretending to be for me. My body has been burned. Eight my days, don't lie.
But I feel like the last minute of this song ends the record on as high of a note as you can end it on. And I'm just going to let the last part of the song do the talking. This really feels like it's a big achievement by a band that I feel as if, I don't want to say that their influence is going unrecognized, especially just given how many people just want them to keep rehashing the Doom EP. But at the same time, the amount of amazing music that we've kind of gotten inspired by Sun Eater, I mean, we have bands like Rivers of Nile kind of picking up the torch from right after when Job for a Cowboy stopped making music. We've got stuff like a newer band like Alluvial making amazing groove heavy music, but still with that progressive metal mindset. And yes, I know they have former members of the Faceless and Black Crown Initiate, so on and so forth. And another band that I just mentioned, Black Crown Initiate. I feel like Job for a Cowboy should be considered a more influential band beyond just one EP that they quickly ditched that style of.
I agree. Like, it kind of sucks that their other albums don't really, you don't really see them as, like, as much a part of the conversation of some of the best death metal records of their time.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie or be dishonest either. I genuinely thought, it's just another band for scene kids to do stupid hardcore dances and just wants generic breakdowns. Like, as soon as you hear Embedded, you are like, this is not generic-ass deathcore. So whenever I try to get people into the band, I'm always like, you can really start at any point and be super happy with what they're doing. But to be honest, I think Moon Healer might just be their crowning achievement. I think this album, again, is a masterpiece. I think it belongs up in the conversation with Symbolic by Death, Nihility by Decapitated, and Time Begins by Decrepit Birth, Annihilation of the Wicked by Nile, Colored Sands by Gore Guts. Like, I know this all just sounds like high praise for a band that just put out their first album in 10 years, but for real, guys, this album is genuinely that good.
Yeah. To reiterate what I said at the top, I'm not saying that no other album is going to beat this record. I'm just saying everyone else has one tough act to follow.
Yeah, the competition's going to be really tough this year. And I guess if I have to recommend, obviously, if you're a Job for a Cowboy fan, like both of us are, you're going to love this record. If you haven't heard it yet already, despite some act of the devil, if you haven't heard it, go listen to it right now. It was worth waiting 10 years for a new record. If you're like one of my friends I was mentioning at the beginning of the episode that wasn't really much of a fan but heard little snippets of this new album, I would genuinely say really give this a listen. I would say if you love stuff like Dream Theater, Opeth, again, Rivers of Nile, the newer band like Alluvial, you're really gonna love this record more than likely. I mean, there's plenty of progressive sections, there's also plenty of technical death metal sections. It has enough variety to keep your interest and have enough of a cool concept to make you go, wow, there's really something going on here. And if you're somebody who thinks Job for a Cowboy is just another deathcore band and that's all they ever were and blah blah fucking blah, I'm obviously not going to convince you. You've made up your mind, and I don't give a shit what you have to say.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And I guess just before we forget, places we are going to suggest that you pick this album up from, you can obviously get it off of Amazon. If you want to support Metal Blade directly, you can go directly to Metal Blade's own website, which I believe is partnered with Indie Merch. Or you can also just go straight to Indie Merch as well. They've got pre-orders for stuff like the new Aborted, new Ingested, this. So if you, I want you guys to go pick it up. But like, if you're on a vinyl hunt or want to pick up some more CDs from Indie Merch or Amazon, those are your places to go get this record.
One more thing before we wrap this up. In case you guys haven't noticed, it's impossible for us to keep up with every new release on a given year. So I just want to give a shout out to a couple other records that came out around this time and a few upcoming releases. So the day that Moon Healer came out, we also got the latest from Darkest Hour, Petrol One Terminal.
I'm so happy to have that band back too.
Same. And then by the time this album or this podcast is up, on March 8th, Judas Priest has their new album, Invincible Shield, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Got that shit pre-ordered, dude. CD and vinyl.
And if you're a Sum 41 fan, they have their final album coming out March 29th, Heaven and Hell. I don't know if we'll be able to cover that one, but yeah, to hear that this is like the end of their run is a bit bittersweet, but I'm kind of looking forward to how they close out their career.
Yeah, I just wanted to say Mike mostly brings it up because Sum 41 do flirt with metal a lot of the time. So I was actually going to say, don't forget to bring up that new Eshawn record. That album's fucking phenomenal, man.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Eshawn, if you guys haven't heard it, since this is a pretty prog-centric episode on Job for a Cowboy, go listen to Eshawn's new self-titled record. It's his first album he's put out in 6 years, aside from two EPs during the height of the pandemic. It's the closest we're probably ever going to get to an Emperor-style album out of the man, but it's a fantastic record. Go listen to Eshawn's newest record. Can't recommend it enough. Listen to the new Job for a Cowboy and that back to back.
And there you go. The next podcast after this, we are, you know what, Nick, I'll let you tease this one.
We are going through the Necrotic Manifesto to see what we can see through Terrorvision, and what we'll end up seeing is a Mania cult and a vault of horrors. Yeah, that we're obviously doing a Why We Love This Band on Aborted. So I can't wait to cover this band's entire catalog, guys.
Yes, this one has kind of been a long time coming, and I'm glad I finally have the platform to talk about probably one of the first big brutal death metal bands I've like become a serious fan of.
Oh, it's half the reason I got a webcam so we could actually record these.
But until next time, Nick, where can everyone find you online?
Super Saiyan Death Metal God on Instagram and the Twitter knockoff that nobody uses anymore, Threads. I mostly post album covers, movies I'm watching, particularly horror movies, video games I might be playing. Please help my posts not get ratioed by the algorithm compared to my stories. It's much appreciated. Although somehow I've got my three recent posts that are highlighted on my page past 200. So I'm apparently doing super well. I don't even know what I'm doing. Fuck the algorithm, guys.
Nice. And you guys can find me on various social media at CaptainK42. You guys can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and that place at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, on Podchaser. Consider supporting our Patreon at patreon.com/Renegade Pop Culture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at RenegadePopCulture.com. In escape, so do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Jukebox. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.